Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, January the 6th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's a delight to be here, an honor and a privilege. We are honored for every guest that chooses to join us, every day that you choose to join us, in strengthening and empowering this ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness so that we can get to critical mass.
Michael, you just faded away. You're hard to hear.
Is that better?
Not much.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, good. So there was a physicist who lived about 2,000 years ago who explained, in ancient terms, but basically explained the principle of critical mass. And what he said was, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And we are here to be the leavening. And, you know, I think we can fairly safely assume he wasn't talking about bread. We are here to be the leavening that strengthens the activity of forgiveness on the planet so that the principle of forgiveness can be understood on a global basis. Forgiveness is not what our culture has taught us it is. We've been taught a false idea. You can pretty much rest assured, if it's in the popular culture, it's probably not true about human life. It's true about non-humans who want to make money from it, but it's probably not true about human life. And in particular, the principle of forgiveness that we've been taught is absolutely untrue. We've been taught that the reason we're in pain or turmoil is because of what somebody else did and how it's all somebody else's fault. And all we need to do is be kind enough to forgive them, to let them off the hook for the fact that our physiology is producing pain, and then everything will be fine. And our offering is that that's a lie. It's not true. As our culture lies to us, and we buy ideas that are incorrect, and we language incorrectly, we find ourselves in trouble and in difficulty. So what we're here to make available on a global scale is the ancient Aramaic first century idea of forgiveness, which literally is a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove the insanity. Remove everything that's untrue. Remove every hostility, every fear. Every fear-based thought, and if your physiology can still produce fear, then know that you've got fear-based thoughts. You've got to apply forgiveness if you want to be free of those. Your physiology, your mind, your emotions were not meant for fear. Fear is an unnatural condition. Fear is a condition that infects the human mind with insanity. And that insanity has become so prevalent. And, you know, it isn't just prevalent in today's world. We can go back several thousand years ago, and we hear a story about this insane creature called Goliath. This creature seems undefeatable, unconquerable, so powerful, so vicious, so warlike, and so murderous that nobody can defeat him. And this Goliath is insane. And Goliath is a symbol for the insane thinking of the non-human mind, the mind based in hostility or fear, that believes that everything that's going on in its world is everybody else's fault, and all he has to do is kill. And, of course, we can go to both sides. There's a Mr. and a Mrs. Goliath. The female of the species is not exempt from this insanity any more than the male is. When we're speaking out of words based in hostility and fear, we're speaking insane. Now, you might remember David Bohm when he spoke about sustained incoherence, that the problem in our world is our thinking, and that most people continue to think the way they think, they produce results with their thinking, and then they fight against the results they produce. But they keep on thinking that way. When you hold a thought in your mind based in hostility or fear, then you are in sustained incoherence, and everything that comes out of your mouth is insanity. When you allow your mind to be restored to love, and that's what forgiveness does, then you move out of the insane mind and back to the truth of who you are. Goliath lives in terror, so he needs more and bigger weapons. You know, you look at how good the world has become at training men and women how to fight and how to defend themselves and how to, you know, just the whole insane game. We see relationships that appear to be love relationships, but in an instant, Goliath can turn them to hate. If you've been in a relationship where love has turned to hate, recognize that you've been insane in that relationship. Love was not present in you. Perhaps approval was. Perhaps you said words that sounded like "I love you," but it really didn't have anything to do with love. What it had to do with was approval. The way you can tell whether you've got a love relationship or whether you've got one based in the insanity of love equals approval is when you hold a goal for someone and they violate that goal, do you go into some form of hostility or fear? You want your spouse to do this or that. Do you go into rage? Do you go into intimidation? Do you go into manipulation? Do you go into control? Then know that you don't have a love relationship. You have the potential for one, but if when you hold a goal and your partner doesn't achieve that goal for you, you lose the active condition of love in your mind. Stop pretending that it's got anything to do with love, because what you're really losing in your mind is the condition of approval. Approval is not love. But Goliath believes that it is. And the language that has developed out of that is always the language of blame. You'll notice when, you know, let's say your spouse isn't doing what you want them to do, then not fulfilling a goal for you, what kind of insane language to use? Well, when you did that, you made me so mad. Well, you should have done this, and then I'd have been happy. Rage is common in Goliath's mind. And you'll notice that no matter how many times you've said to yourself, okay, Michael, I got it. I'm going to stop that. I'm going to do something different. I am going to truly, truly function as love. Well, there's only one tool that will take you there. Saying, I will function as love, will not change the content of Goliath's mind in you. Saying, I will function as love, just means that as long as Goliath is quiet, I get to be nice to you. There may be no love whatsoever in that. When you recognize what love is, and just bring into this conversation a definition of love. Hold a newborn child. You know what love is. Is that present in your relationship? If it isn't, then there's work to be done. And if Goliath's mind is still alive in you, remember Yeshua says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. If you're identified with a hostility and fear-based mind, that self has to die. It dies through forgiveness. And most people don't want to entertain or engage in forgiveness because it means the self they think they are is going to die. And the truth is, all you're going to do is get rid of your and become free of your hostility and fear. And you're not designed to live with hostility and fear. It's not designed to be in you. It never has been. You are not made for hostility or fear. You are made for truly that human active presence of love. Hold the newborn. You're made to have that delicate, sweet presence in your physiology 24/7, 365. And so when you recognize that, there's work to be done. You know, in that story of David and Goliath, we were given the keys. There were five smooth stones. And we must engage in those five smooth stones in order to defeat the mind of hostility or fear. And as you do that, life moves forward. What are the five smooth stones? Well, the first one we'll offer is reason. Now, you'll notice that we live in a world of resonance. If I say to you, don't think about the color of your car, what will fire in your brain cell structure? The color of your car. That's resonance. The mind, the non-being mind's cheap copy. And, you know, you have to really discern. You have to develop the brain cells to know the difference between the real thing and the cheap copy. So the mind's cheap copy of reason or choice is resonance, resonance. Brain cells fire, and I think this is my choice. And all it is the content of my mind. And as I let go of the content that doesn't belong there, I get to free myself from it. So reason is the first one. And choice, that is the ability to select the energy and the thoughts that we're going to engage in consciously rather than just replay something that's come from the past from the unconscious level of the mind. So that's the first one. The second of the five smooth stones we'll offer is will. Now, the cheap copy of will is willpower. I think that I can get my way by forcing everybody to do what I want them to do. I can control you. I'll use whatever intimidation or degradation or criticism or condemnation I need to. I'll inform you how wrong you are, what's wrong with you, and what you need to do it right, that is to do it my way. And that's willpower. That's got nothing to do with will. Will is a spiritual faculty. As reason or choice is, charge of Goliath. You dismantle the thoughts and the feelings of Goliath, the insanity, and you manage your mind by an act of will. It's not about managing or controlling anybody else. It's about managing your own mind. If you say you're interested in relationship with the Creator, in relationship with love, then you will manage your mind so that the only thing that mind responds to is love. That's the second of the five smooth stones, will. Then there's intuition. Now, the cheap copy of intuition is the psychic realm. And, you know, you'll notice the ancients warned us about the psychic game. Why did they warn us about the psychic game? Because if you're engaged in the psychic game, you're coming through carbon-based memory. And what happens is, the person who functions out of the psychic realm tends to project everything that's unresolved in them into the situations that they're tuning into. So an example might be someone who's going through, let's say, some relationship challenges, and they go to the psychic for guidance. And the psychic, the year before, having gone through a horrible divorce, because that's the content resonated in the psychic realm, says to this person who is going through relationship challenges that would be an opportunity to strengthen and heal through the relationship and to strengthen the relationship, the psychic says, oh, you're going to have a terrible divorce. It's going to be so bad and it's going to be so awful. You better get out of there fast. And if this person buys the psychic's ideas, then they start doing something that they're not designed to do and they miss an opportunity. So the intuitive realm is the realm of the subtle energy in which we live, move, and have our being, and to have relationship with that. and to be able to decode and follow the guidance of the eternal forces that exist around us. If you look at the first of the Beatitudes, where we're told we're supposed to be, by the Greeks, we're supposed to be poor in spirit. In Aramaic, it says, those whose home is in the eternal forces from God. So you're not stuck in Goliath, the mind of hostility and fear from the past, but rather you really, truly live in these loving eternal forces that are all around you and continuously there to support you and nurture you and take care of you. So intuition is the third of the smooth stones. Then true perception. As you clean up, and the tool that you engage in here is forgiveness, as you remove what does not belong, then instead of perception coming through that carbon-based memory system from the past, then your mind can give you the truth of in any given situation, in any given circumstance. Of course, the non-being mind's cheap copy of that's just good old perception. I'm enraged and it's all your fault. Look, my mind is showing me how you caused my rage, therefore it must be true. You must be the cause of my rage. Well, notice if you have a particular rage spot that you've been through 87 different times with 42 different people, that you're the only one that was there every time. Your rage is about you folks. It's not about anybody else. It's your own Goliath. And you can say 1,000 times, I want to get rid of my rage, but you can't get rid of your rage by saying, I want to get rid of my rage. You get rid of your rage by applying the tool of forgiveness and dismantling the energy that runs as Goliath in you. And so the fourth of the smooth stones is true perception. And then there's the ability to imagine. And to image in is to be able to tap into these energies that are around us, bring them into expression through you, and create with them consciously. The non-being mind's cheap copy of imagination is fantasy. Oh, I heard about this work called forgiveness. I'm going to go and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to help it, and I'm going to fund it, and I'm going to help to make it happen. And a week later, it's like, oh, that forgiveness stuff. Oh, well, you know, yeah, that was kind of cool. But, fantasy is the game of the non-being mind that replaces true ability to imagine, to image in. And it is with those five smooth stones, along with the tool of forgiveness, that Goliath is dismantled. Yeshua says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. The non-being self. If you've become identified with hostility and fear in any form, then that self has to go. And that's what we're here to support you in. So, Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
We do, when he's on.
Hey there, young man. How are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Anything exciting in your world?
Well, there's all kinds of things exciting in the world. It's a cold and snowy day, but we have people working on applying these tools and learning the difference between all of these cheap copies of our spiritual faculties and the actual spiritual faculties themselves. And it's a lot of work. It reminds me of a story by Guy Finley where this reporter is driving and sees a road that's not on his GPS or the map, so he takes it because he's curious, and he sees people standing in front of very small, very narrow walls, pounding their heads on them and crying and sitting up against them and crying, and he gets out to go over and ask them, why don't they just walk around the wall? And a wall pops up in front of the reporter. And he tries to move around it, and it moves in front of him. And he tries to climb over it, and it gets taller. And he tries to push against it, and it gets thicker. So he sits down, and he's kind of attuned spiritually. So he sits down and just takes a few deep breaths and ponders this. And he sees a guy who really quite old, maybe over 100 years old, kind of tottering toward what looks to be a town in the distance. And a wall pops up in front of this old man. And the reporter thinks, oh, that's bad. This guy's not going to live long enough to get around that wall. And he sees the man mouth something at the wall and then just walk right through it like it's not even there, just like a ghost. And so the reporter jumps up and runs after the man, and, of course, a wall pops up in front of him. And he calls after the old man, and the old man stops and comes back to him and says, oh, what's the matter? How can I help you? And the reporter says, I just saw a miracle. You just walked right through that wall. How did you, all of us are stuck here. How did you, and the old man said, well, I just said what my dad told me to say anytime I get stuck. And the reporter said, please, tell me what it is. And the old man said, well, what I have been up until now is powerless to take me any further. So all of my use of all of the old ego tricks, of all of the old willpower, of all of the old, I'm going to find a reason, a logical way around this, I'm still stuck. So I have to drop all that and step into something completely new. And it's not about what's outside of me. It's about the alarm system going off inside of me, anger, fear, sadness, tension, that tells me I'm still doing the same old stuff. And if I breathe into it, I was just the other day listening again to the ancient Aramaic definitions for the way of the Beatitudes. I love the idea, Dale talks about it. The first three simply say, listen, whenever you get tight, tense, angry, scared, or frustrated, do the first three Beatitudes. Breathe, feel it, and let it flow through you. Make your home in the breathing unity. Let the fertile soil of queendom build, source your clear guidance. Keep breathing and soften whatever is rigid within you. And let the deep tap roots of those pains and fears come up and just keep your breath flowing and let it flow through you. Just like a yoga practice. Don't try to figure it out. Just make your home in your breath. Watch what comes up. Hold the space of love and watch what happens. That's what I was thinking about.
Yay.
When you were going through the five smooth stones.
Awesome. I just love how Guy tells stories. He's just such an awesome storyteller. That's pretty cool. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, he has the same teachers you do, all these same solid principles, and they're just coming through him in a slightly different way, but it's on a regular basis. It's like tuning into Robert Smith from that Faster EFT and listening to that one thing on spirituality,
right,
and just hearing Guy Finley and Michael Rice and Dale Hoffman come right through him. It's just amazing.
Well, the truth is there's only one teacher, and if we're listening, our inner tune, our intuition will teach us and empower us to teach. And that's, to me, that's the whole key and the crux to the game.
Yeah. And,
so how cool is that?
Yeah, and I like what Dale's doing, too, where he's starting and ending his talks with this toning, which helps people just slow down. Don't try to think about it. Don't try and sound like Gladys Knight and the Pips. Just tone and just get in touch with what's vibrating within you. And it's another nice tool for just stopping the mind that wants to go figure it out. Oh, I can't remember what he said there in the middle. I got to go ask him. What was that one word you said that I think is probably going to be the key to my salvation? What is it? And there is none of that. It's not in the words. It's, you know, words don't teach, experience teaches. And if we can put ourselves in a position where we can craft our lives in such a way that we're actually pulling out of the insanity of the culture and giving ourselves time to just slow down and breathe more often, it's amazing what can happen. And then if you, on top of that, if you have tools like the ones you're offering, it's just mind-boggling how fast things can change.
It is, isn't it? It's absolutely amazing. It is amazing.
And I've had a couple people recently who are sending me notes about, okay, so I did this and I did that, and now all hell is breaking loose.
Yes. Oh, what a great thing to have happened.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel so great. But the nice thing is they're starting to get the message from enough different sources that they're realizing, okay, so this is probably what I have to keep doing and go through and be willing to go through it without going back to my old, what would we call them, escapes or attacks upon others or attacks upon the world. and sit with this and watch what comes next. And they've had enough experience going through some of these, you know, what you call healing crises, that they're willing to do it. And I'm just, it's a wonderful thing to be around. I've said it for a long time. It's a wonderful thing to be around when people choose to get healthy. And it's happening more and more. And I just, I'm very, very grateful that this time around, that's part of my role, is to be around when more and more people are choosing to get healthy.
Yeah, things are definitely reaching a new crescendo in energy. The workshop we did on Sunday here in Bradenton, Dorothy Ann Jackson, she's been around the forgiveness worksheet and process. She's been to Heartland a couple of times. So she's been doing the work to some degree for better than a quarter of a century. And she came to me two or three times since then, and she's like, this work's hitting a whole new level, isn't it? I'm like, yeah, it is. We're blessed. For sure. For sure. Pop, pop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
So, do we have any callers or anybody with a question in the chat room?
Check in with Jean.
Actually,
see what she
says. Peace made a statement in the chat room when you were talking about Guy Finley's story about the wall, and he says, in order to walk through the walls, we must become transparent to all that flows through the unconscious and create trust, hope, faith in all things through the I Am. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes. Right on. Peacemaker, we're delighted you're here and that you're well and happy. We're hoping and holding the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. And we appreciate you being there holding the space for us.
Yes, we do. Nobody has a hand up, so there's several people on the switchboard, so if somebody presses 1, you are up with no waiting. And for those who are listening, our calling number is 646-200-4169, and press 1, and that puts you in queue.
So if Tim and I and Jeannie had been on the platform having the conversation we've just had, talking about Goliath, the insanity, the 5 smooth stones, I know every one of you is listening. When we walk down off the platform, if you had the opportunity, you'd walk over and you'd have a question, or perhaps more questions than you can think about asking. And maybe you're nervous. Maybe you're like, oh, I'll be on the radio and my voice will be a little funny. Okay, no problem. Just bypass that. Take a breath. And call, put your hand up. If you just hit 1, that will put a little hand up in the phone queue, and Jeannie will know that you want to speak, and she'll introduce you by your area code. And so we'd love to hear from you. If I were there live in front of you, and you were in the audience, what would your question be to me as I finish talking?
We have a hand up.
David and Goliath, go for it.
28, you're on the air.
This is Magda calling.
Welcome, young lady. It's good
Hi.
To hear your voice. Welcome back to winter. Ooh.
Hey, yeah, we got winter here.
I heard.
So it is really good to hear, Jeannie, that at least you sound like you're doing better today. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I am getting my voice back. It still cracks every now and then, but it's definitely better than it has been. Thank you, and welcome back.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So I have a question. I need help thinking about this myself so that I can talk to someone else about it. And this is a person who knows of your work pretty much and does not agree that our words are that important. This person says, well, I know what I mean. For instance, you know, maybe one example, if a person says, oh, it just blew my mind, which is quite common for people to say, and I think I've ventured to say, are you sure you want to say that you're blowing your mind or something blew your mind? And the response has been, well, no, I don't mean that. I don't know what I mean. So my words don't matter. And I've been thinking of this just recently in regard to how that would apply to, for forgiveness and the real true meaning of forgiveness. And I'm not even sure how to state this question any further. Do you get what I'm talking about, Michael?
Well, I think I've got it. And, you know, there's a in order to illustrate the power and the meaning of our words and to recognize that it is through the frequency set up by our words that we reach out into the world, I tell a little story. And you've probably heard me tell this story, but putting it in the context of your question might make it useful to you. And that is, you know, I've got a table up here in front of the room. Let's imagine we've got an audience with 100 people in it. And I've done this exercise hundreds of times over the last 45 years. And I ask people to imagine that I have put a table in front of the room. And on the table, I have put enough frogs for everybody in the room to be able to pick one up. And so I ask everybody to reach out and pick up a frog. And then to describe, I ask them to really look at it closely, you know, bring it right up close to their face, look at all sides of it, take a smell of it, really, really investigate that frog. And then I ask the audience to tell me what it is that they would use as descriptors for the frog. And so I'll usually get things like, you know, sticky fingers, green, slimy, smelly, fat, you know, smiling, green, you know, plastic green. I'll get lots of different descriptors. And then once everybody's given me their description of their frog, I'll point out that what I did was I put enough 3x3x3 green styrofoam cubes on the table for everybody to pick one up. They're called frogs. It's what a florist uses to arrange flowers in. It's called a frog. And then I invite the audience to notice that they could only reach out for what fired in the brain cell structure of their mind. They couldn't reach for anything else. And then I ask the question, how many know how to reach your arm out? And, you know, some people will tend to hesitate, but somebody will put their hand up and they'll say, okay, great. You're sure now? You know how to reach your arm out? Oh, yes, I know how it's done. Like, great. Okay, so explain the process to me. I would like to know what brain cells fire at what voltages, what nerve pathways are followed down the arm, and what balances and counterbalances with each muscle are involved in order for you to reach your arm out. And, of course, there's a dumbfounded look because nobody knows how to do that. Even the best physiologist can't tell us how to do that. And so I point out that notice that you don't know how to do anything, but there's a power in you that does. And when you set the command, I mean, you don't even know how to open your jaw. Tell me what muscles are involved. Tell me what voltages are involved and what brain cells. We don't have a clue. Go back to Yeshua. He says, of myself, I do nothing. The Father within me does the works. There is a power in us that follows the frequencies that we set in motion. And that power that reaches our arm out can only reach for what fires in our brain cell structure. It can only follow the instructions that we give it. The truth is we don't know how any of it's done, but something in us does. And it's that something that receives our communication. You go to the ancient Aramaic, and a good video to watch, or you might want to share with this person, or audio if you've got it, is the workshop on creating consciously. And in that workshop, we talk about the creative process and that there is a power in us that's always arranging this energy system we call life into the form that weaving happens through the brain cells that fire in response to our words. I remember working with one woman who she had been working hard and she kept asking for a long break. I want a long break. I want a long break. I want a long break. And she fell. The longest bone in the human body is the bone between your shoulder and your elbow. It's the least broken bone in the body. That's the bone that she broke. And interestingly enough, just to look at how far do these energies and vibrations extend. Remember, this is the least broken bone in the body. How often do you see somebody at the age of 50 plus who's broken that bone in their body? About 6 months after this happened to her, her former husband, who she'd been divorced from for 10 years, broke the same bone. I don't think there's any coincidence. I think she set a frequency in motion. She set herself up to engage in that the activity that it took to break that bone. And she set an energy up. She was still in a lot of resentment and struggle with her relationship with her former husband. And I think through that resonance, he picked up on the same frequency and broke the same bone, was inclined into the circumstances to produce that result. Whatever frequencies, my offering would be whatever frequencies we engage in, the activity that it seems to happen independently in the external world is a result of something that is back of and superior to that activity. And what is back of and superior to everything that happens in our world is our thoughts by our words. So that would be my input to that person.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember that story. So thank you for that. And so connect us up with then believing how important it is for people who are going to do this work to understand the difference between a typical and generally accepted definition for forgiveness and the true Aramaic definition for forgiveness.
Well, with my words, I direct my mind, and my mind can only follow the pattern set up by my words. If I hold the Goliath belief that forgive means you're to blame for what's happening in my life, I let you off the hook for that, then when I say I forgive you, I think I'm done. And I think I'm independent of what you do. Like, you know, you're the one who makes a victim of me. I have nothing to do with it. So when I define forgiveness as letting someone else off the hook, once I've let someone else off the hook, I think I'm finished. And that's like, you know, the job is half done.
Okay,
when
so this
I recognize that actual forgiveness is the tool with which I go inside myself and remove the part of my mind that is back of and superior to this action or activity, then when I redefine what the world calls forgiveness as what it actually is, it's pardoning. You did something really bizarre and off the wall, and I choose to pardon you. And then I'm going to recognize that, you know, I've been through this event 87 different times with 42 different people. You're not the first one that's done it to me. So I'm now going to apply forgiveness to my mind to get in touch with the part of me that's engaged in creating this result and remove it. Then I've gone into the act of actual forgiveness.
Okay.
So to me, that would be the importance of defining the words properly. You know, if I say, another example you've heard me use is, if I raise a child to believe that his nose is his ear, every time I say, touch your nose, he's going to put his hand to his ear. And he's going to be mistaken because he's following words that are not accurately defined. When I don't have accurate definitions for words, I can't think accurately. When I can't think accurately, I can't behave accurately. When I don't behave accurately, my life gets insane.
Okay. So what I'm taking from everything you just said is that it, for me, it means whether or not we are able to see that our own experiences and our emotions, our own responsibility, and if we continue to see forgiveness as it is generally accepted, then it will reinforce our belief that it can be someone else's fault. Because a lot of people want to take responsibility and they're really willing to do that until it gets one thing that they say, well, no, this can't be me. This had to be him or her. And so as long as they understand forgiveness in the it is commonly accepted, they're going to be able to use that as a crutch to support that belief that it is outside of themselves or that it is outside of myself.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And as I correct the words, I can think correctly. When I can think correctly, I can behave correctly. Right. Makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Okay. Super. Thank you very much, Michael. It was doing around.
Absolutely delighted.
Good. Thank you for helping me make those connections. And have a blessed day. We can just continue getting better and better.
Thank you. And, you know, thank you for the question, because it's the questions that are important. And I think that was a really important conversation that probably will support lots of people in understanding differently what the truth of the whole game of forgiveness is about, and the power of our words. It's pretty important.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. Okay, well, I'm going to sign off and wish you a beautiful day, and probably talk to you very soon. Thank
you. All right, lots of love. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
646-200-4169 is our call-in number. Pick a phone, give us a call. We'd love to hear your voice. We'd love to hear your question. We'd love to support you. What are you working on? What's up in your world? And how can we support you? Jeannie, do we have anybody with a thought or a question in the chat room to be aware of? Or anything in the, anybody with a hand up in the phone queue that has a thought for us?
No? So if someone presses, oh, a hand just went up. Area code 541, you're on the air. Is Julie?
Yes.
Hey there, young lady, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm experiencing a little bit of fear here. I don't really know what I'm going to say exactly, but I'm experiencing courage, actually, because I raised my hand. So I love what you talked about with Mog. I loved your
question. Nice catch.
Yeah.
Nice catch.
I changed my language, and I feel more empowered immediately. Yay.
Cool.
But I don't, okay, so I'm going to do my best to use better language, because I've been not practicing it as well lately, and so I don't know. But anyway, I find myself in a situation with a person, a roommate, a reflection of passive-aggressive behavior, which I don't know exactly the definition, but a friend of mine who's a therapist told me it's something to do with unexpressed anger, but it's expressing covertly and perhaps an attitude of not being cooperative. So I've been on a position in my mind to just let this person work it out and come to the table with their best and highest skills so that we could have a discussion. And they just don't want to talk about anything. They're in real extreme avoidance now for about 7 days. I also see this as a representation of me being locked in my room with nothing but my mind to work things out with. So I have a lot of compassion for them and the pain they're in, and also myself. I'm having to see and feel my own resonances, which I know is a blessing coming through for me to heal some things from childhood. That's scary. Right now, I'm feeling the fear in my gut about that. And so where I get
so
stuck
notice, catch yourself, just for a second, Julie, catch yourself in your denial.
Okay.
Did you just hear your denial?
No.
Okay. So notice your words were, "and that's scary." So notice that you're not involved and you're not responsible for your fear when you say, "that's scary." That's responsible for your fear. And when I hold that something outside of me is responsible for what's happening inside of me, I'm in denial and I dissociate from the part of my mind that I most want to heal. So as you can shift your language and recognize, this whole circumstance brings up fear for me, then you get to confront the next level of fear in your mind. and that's how you get free of it.
Oh.
So coming out of denial into responsibility. I have fear about this, rather than that's scary.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense?
Yes, and I've said those words before, and you spot them with me. So, okay, so that's where I was stuck, because I was the effect of it instead of seeing what's causing it, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so then now I could do a worksheet on it.
That would probably be very useful. And as you do worksheets around it, you can be support for this person, because recognize that probably you and this person you're talking about are in resonance with each other on this whole issue of fear. And so when you face and you forgive your fear, then you can be a space of safety and healing and confidence for them to heal, to feel, and heal their fear. And you both get free of it. So you'll be able, as you let loose of the fears, you forgive the fear in you, you'll be able to create a space of safety for them to look at, or at least if there's any willingness to go there, for them to be able to responsibly look at their fear and move through it. And you'll be able to converse, you'll speak different words from a whole different space. And it might look like, well, you know, I realize that we have an issue, and I've had some fear and trepidation about approaching it. And I've been looking at my fear and been working on forgiving it, on letting go of my fear, so that we can have a more positive, constructive, loving interaction here, especially seeing as how we're sharing a home together. We're sharing a space. So I want to create a space of openness and support and love for each of us to let go of and forgive this fear that we're feeling.
Oh, well, that's good.
Move forward with responsibility communication tools.
Okay. Yeah, because I was holding over him. We'd been through this once before, and I did some responsibility communication, and he took it to be that he could blame me for the whole thing, that I had owed him a responsibility or an apology. And so I see him now as waiting to get the huge apology from me, when I don't really want to give it this time, because I see how he's using it rather than the way I intend it to be received. But I could give it another try now and change my words and actually create the space inside me first. There, that was it. So if I'm connected, then I can. I don't have to have a "I'm right" attitude about any of it, and just be a space for him to empty and communicate, I guess. But it brings up fear in me when I think I'm going to be blamed or attacked, or he's just going to use the whole interaction to be right, and I guess I need to let go of that even being an outcome where it does that. You know, I have a goal that I don't want that to happen, so I have to cancel that too.
Well, okay. Actually, forgiveness won't look like canceling the goal for that not to happen, because remember that forgiveness only works with constructive outcomes. So it would be looking at what's the goal you really hold, and that's where the forgiveness work will be. So it sounds like your goal is for yourself to be able to communicate responsibly about what's up for you, and for him to take responsibility for what's up for him. You know, doing responsibility communication doesn't mean that I stand there and go, oh, yeah, and it's all my fault, and I'm to blame, and so, okay, you can blame me, and I'll just apologize, and it'll be over. That's not responsibility communication. Responsibility communication is when I language in a way that I recognize I have an issue. For instance, in that situation, responsibility might look like, you know, it seems to me that when I communicate, and here's my issue. The last time we had, remember last Tuesday we sat down and we had a conversation, and when we had that conversation, I had an issue come up in me, and I'd like support in healing my issue. And what my issue looks like is that in my mind, you turned it all around and made it my fault and just felt like you deserved an apology. And the issue that I have with that is I feel blamed. And what I want to do is heal the part of me that feels blamed for anything and ask for support. Now, he may be in a position, I don't know him, I don't know if he has any familiarity with the tools. He may be in a position where he jumps up and down and dances and does hallelujahs because you're in pain and you're in turmoil and you have an issue. And so in that situation, it won't be so much, this won't be the tool for him, but it'll be a tool that will shift and show you parts of your mind that you'll get to heal. And as you move forward in that healing process, then things change, things shift. But, you know, you doing responsibility communication doesn't mean that you can't hold him accountable for his part in whatever's happening. And so when you're really clear about how you don't want something to happen again, that's the time to let go of that and start to focus on what is it I really do want and do my forgiveness work around that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Something I didn't get clearly because the words were a little muffled. It was the first half of the last thing that you just said about when it comes up, instead of what do I do? Oh, I can see it as an opportunity to communicate what it's bringing up for me, regardless of whether or not he's going to be a supportive person and play a supportive role. I at least am opening myself to be supported and heal this and for myself.
Whether yeah, you'll get to see the part of your mind. You'll get to see the part of your mind that needs to be healed. You'll see it more clearly as you communicate responsibly. Whether he responds with support or not is irrelevant. Of course, much more fun if he responds with support, but that's not a requirement.
Michael?
Okay. Go for it, Dr. Tam.
I just wanted to toss something in here. It came out of one of an Abraham talk. And so, Julie, a key
yes.
thing that so this comes up routinely in our support group when we talk about this responsibility communication. There's a lot of push and pull and trying to get the tool to help us reach a certain result. And again, the importance is to cancel the goal for that result. One of the goals that we have is, and we're, you don't want to put too much effort into asking for support from somebody and holding the goal that they support you, because it really isn't their job to support you. And in the Abraham work, this woman came in and talked about she was so upset with her mother that her mother isn't supportive, et cetera. And the message came through very clearly, Source is there to support you. Your true nature of love is more powerful and waiting to express through you more powerfully than any negative that you'll ever encounter outside of you, whether it's from a person or a situation. And if you just make your home in your breath and connect to that source, that's all the support you need.
Okay.
And it's a huge mistake to try to find the support outside of yourself from somebody who's not willing to give it. Now, if somebody's willing to support you with love and connect to their true nature as love and extend that to you, as Michael just said, that's a lot more fun and it makes things a lot easier. But it's not necessary for you to recognize your true nature and to breathe into that and extend that to them, even if they're in a rage, even
okay.
if they're focused on I've got to be right and you have to be wrong.
So once I've completed my communication, then if there's nothing else constructive that's going to happen in response or anything, I can just say, okay, well, I'm done. That's all I needed to say. And, you know, I could say, is there anything you need to say? And if not, then I'll move on. Yes. I think I know what you and Michael are saying. I've had this experience that as I was actually in the true resonance of and willingness to speak truthfully, as it would leave my mouth, I would start to feel the relief because it was congruent. It was the truth, and I was in my core of love for myself and for the other person also, just because it was all-encompassing. So when that takes root or is moving through me, then I feel the safety, and I can breathe, and I can just complete my communication as responsibly as a, you know, as I'm able in those moments. And then that's all that, I mean, then that's complete for me because I've seen the contents of my mind. I've been shown what's been going on with me by Holy Spirit, Rupa Dakucha, you know, and my willingness. So then that all I'm wanting is to remove the contents from my mind. I'm really wanting that removed for me. And by my willingness, I gave it out. I gave it away, and it's being removed for me. So it has nothing to do with the other person even getting it at all, really, I guess. Does that sound right?
Well, my input would be at the same time is, you know, we live in this world with other people. And it's reasonable for us to be able to communicate in a way that opens a space that if we, you know, are choosing to, you know, in this case, share a home with someone, that we can reasonably be supportive of each other. And if I'm not receiving support, to look at the part of my mind that feels like it doesn't deserve or can't have support, and to keep moving in the direction of opening that for healing, so that ultimately I am such a welcoming space and such a safe space that if someone shows up who isn't capable of support, they heal in my presence, I heal in that presence, and together we move forward in new ways that previously were unfathomable. And so,
okay,
again, it's not a requirement that somebody else do it, but as I truly heal the deepest parts of my mind, the tendency will be for a shift to happen in the minds around us. You know, that story we tell about, or not story, the true happening of this lion who, you know, is raised by these two men. And when they go to visit this lion in the wild, the people who own the preserve or run the preserve are sure they're going to have to shoot this lion. And not only does the lion come in a friendly, welcoming, playful space with them, but the wild female lion that he's mated with walks up to these guys and is available to be petted and rubs against them just like a kitten would. And so there's a different space there. When we achieve that space, the tendency will be for more and more people to want to rush in and play. And we're down to just a few seconds. It's a fast show. Thank you for that input, and if there's more conversation to be had, maybe we could open the space in tomorrow's show to continue the conversation. But in the meantime, we're just about complete. Our time is up, a fast hour. We appreciate each of you. We ask you to bring a stranger to the show tomorrow and give the world an awesome gift, create the best year yet of your eternal life. If you want to check out our schedule, you can go to whyagain.org, and there you'll see our schedule in Tampa. It'll start next Sunday for a full week, and the next week there's a full week in St. Petersburg. So if you're in the Tampa-St. Pete area, come and play. We appreciate you. We bless you, and we'll look forward to talking to you more. Blessings. Bye-bye.